great to have special music. It's great to have the person that had special music be here when I can tell her thank you. Beautiful, beautiful choice of music. Great job. It takes a special level of commitment to come up here and do a solo. Not the easiest thing anyone's ever does, so certainly that's a great thing as well. And it's a blessing for us to be able to have special music like that. So definitely thank you. Have you ever stopped to look at your life and analyze when you have grown and when you have stagnated? Think back over the last year or several years and recognize that there is differences, that a growth in general isn't consistent, that it comes in spurts. It's much like the rings of a tree. When you look at those, there are thick years and thin years, years of high growth and years of low growth. And as Christians, we have that as well, not necessarily even just years, but different months, different weeks, different times when our growth really spurts forward. And growth involves change, which most of the time doesn't mean that we enjoy the actual period of growth. We can look back and enjoy the results when the growth has been positive. But during the time of growth, it's a stress, generally. Generally, it doesn't come just easy. We give up our old bad habits just like that, not a problem, and we change and we become better. Usually there's some work involved. Usually there's some pain and suffering involved. But there are times, I think, in all of our lives where we can look back and we can just see that everything clicked. Everything came together the right way at the right time in our life, and we had growth. And while this is certainly focused on our Christian life, our Christian growth, I know when we talk about growth, it is in all areas of our life. Growth in our ability to do certain tasks at work, ability to do certain things at school, growth as a husband, a wife, a brother, a sister, a friend. Many different areas where growth does occur in our lives. And I think from the Christian side of growth, one of the best examples of a time where that spurt happens is when we're being called, or for those that were born in the church, when you're making that actual decision for baptism, and then you go through and you are baptized. Things that you didn't understand before become clearer. Your ability to do things more consistently where you failed increases. More times where you're consistent in your observance and in your actually how you live your life. You have a focus and an energy that you didn't necessarily have a short while ago. And you become, again, as we're talking about that process of being called, you become filled with a desire to understand. You ask questions that hadn't even occurred to you before. And I think more than likely, all sitting here, most of us have experienced times like that, where it did, it all clicked, everything came together. And those times, whether it's when you're called or any other time of growth, represent significant moments in our life, important moments, important times where we did what God called us to do, what God created mankind to do, which is grow. God created mankind to grow, to continually improve, to not stagnate. This process, when everything clicks, when it all comes together, goes by many different names. If you were reading books on it, I'm sure you'd find it described in many different ways. My favorite title of this message is that those times are teachable moments. Teachable moments. when we're able to learn at a higher level in a way that sticks when it doesn't always happen that way. And we grow at a peak level. We learn at a peak level. And we make a breakthrough. I think probably a biblical expression of that is the veil is lifted from our eyes in a certain area of our life. We see things more clearly. We see what we need to do. Maybe comic strips, it would be a light bulb over your head, right? I get it. Eureka, another moment, right? Another way that it's described. During those times, those teachable moments, we have a choice. We either take advantage of that moment or we let it pass. Generally, a teachable moment doesn't last long. Generally, it doesn't. Generally, that time of recognition, this is a time where everything is coming together, doesn't last long. And it takes courage to step out on a limb, put yourself out of your comfort zone, and grab that opportunity, seize that opportunity. I'm reminded of a scene in one of the Indiana Jones movies. You know, he's either being chased or he's chasing something, because that's what he's always doing in those movies. He comes to this big chasm that he's got to get over, and standing where he's standing, he doesn't see any way to get across. There's nothing there. But there's some, you know, some inscription somewhere, or some whatever the story goes, that tells him to take a step out in faith. And so he decides to do that, steps out, and there was a bridge there all along, but it was, you know, in the story, it was camouflaged so you couldn't see it. You had to actually take that leap of faith before that way forward was visible. And again, the teachable moments are a lot like that. It does involve faith. Certainly on the Christian living side, it takes faith to step forward, to step out when you don't really know the path. But you know that it's time to seize that moment. And recognizing that teachable moment when it arrives is a critical part of the process. I think all of us, as we go through this sermon, we think about how this has worked in our lives, we can see times where we missed it, where there was a chance that I could have done something differently. I could have stepped out, and I didn't. And I didn't take advantage of that teachable moment. I found a quote from one of the teachers who received the Presidential Award of Excellence. They said, "The very best teachers of students of all ages know the value of the teachable moment. The moment is usually very brief, but it's worth hours of planned instruction." You can spend hours beating somebody when they don't want to learn, when they don't want to listen, trying to shove it into their head. Or if you find that teachable moment, they're ready and willing to accept and learn and grow. And that's the difference for us. Well, a lot of times we're stubborn and we don't learn. We don't open ourselves up to instruction. We think we are fine the way we are. Usually when you are, one of those teachable moments is upon you, it's accompanied by questions. Why is this happening to me? What's going on? What should I do next? When you find yourself asking yourself those questions, that's one of the clues that maybe you're there. Maybe you're at that point in your life. You're at a teachable moment. And hopefully as we go through some of the other points we're going to make in this message, you'll be prepared to seize that, to move forward from it. You ask questions because things are different. Things are hard. Things aren't easy. The tendency is that when everything is nice and good, you just want to cruise along. Don't rock the boat. And it's when things aren't going well that you start asking questions about your life and about how you're living it and what you're doing, whether you're making the right choices. And a teachable moment can come to all ages. I think as you get older, sometimes you get more set in your ways. You think you've spent all the time you need to spend. You've learned all the things you're going to learn, and you stop looking for those moments. And that's certainly a mistake. And if that's our attitude, we're missing out on something that can increase the joy in our life, and it can increase our ability to help and serve and work and do things that make a difference. Doesn't matter what age you are, you can certainly always become a better tool for God to use. And certainly teachable moments is one of the ways he uses to increase our effectiveness. Because we all have been called to serve. We all have been called to be a part of a family. We've all been called by God specifically at this time. And so he expects things from us. He expects growth. He expects us to want to become more than what we are. It's important for us to understand and recognize these teachable moments. And that's what we're going to do today, is examine the events that lead to the moments. Look at some examples of in the Bible where people experience those. And be reminded that those will occur in our life so that we're more ready for them. I have three conditions or three events that are needed to produce a teachable moment. They don't necessarily occur in the order that I'm going to cover them, but in general, I think as you look at those moments, as you experience them going forward, you'll see that they all do have a part in growing from that. The first condition that you have to have in your life is you need relationships. Oh, everybody should silence their phone. You need relationships to take full advantage of a teachable moment. The best instruction that we can receive comes from someone whose words we value. They have credibility in our eyes. We believe that the advice that they're going to give us, the help that they're going to give us, will be useful. That's really the principle behind every mentoring program that you ever come across. A lot of businesses will run mentoring programs. Schools run mentoring programs. Churches, from time to time, run mentoring programs. And when you're looking for someone to mentor you look for someone you can trust. You choose someone you can trust. You choose someone who has experience in the area that you're looking to grow in. And then you have to spend time. Find a way to spend time with them, working with them, or learning from them. Spend time so that they're actually available to answer the questions that you have as you go through this process. Now, for us, we have phones. We don't have to be in physical contact all the time to still be in that position where we can help or we can ask for help. But again, it all starts with having a relationship. Turn to Titus chapter 2. We're going to see a principle discussed here in chapter 2 that is one of the many things that Satan has worked to push out of our society because of the good that it would do if it was followed. Titus chapter 2, we'll read verse 1 to begin with. But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. Then we'll just skip to verse 3. The older women, likewise, should be reverent in your behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet and chaste, and homemakers and good and obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. defining a relationship, a mentoring relationship, a relationship where an older woman, through her experience, can help a younger woman who's going through things for the first time. We have three daughters-in-law. Not a one of them has ever asked my wife for advice on anything that they're struggling with. Never. They wouldn't think of it because it would be an admission that they don't know everything. And that's the lie that you have to keep up in this society, is that you know everything and no one can tell you anything. But we're talking about this passage is talking about that relationship where when someone's ready to grow, they have someone that they can go to who's setting a good example, who's showing them that they know they have ways to help them. This focuses on women. Certainly it applies to men as well. And while this talks about older women to younger women, and I think it's really talking about how to be a wife when you look at some of the things that they're talking about, it really ultimately comes down to someone with experience versus someone who doesn't have experience in whatever you're trying to, wherever you're trying to grow. Having a relationship between those two different groups that allows them to work together for growth. That when the teachable moment comes, there is a resource available. So he says some of the conditions of this relationship. Someone must be doing things right, must have credibility. A younger woman has to recognize that credibility, recognize that. They have to have time to share these things. There has to be respect between the older and the young, older toward the younger and the younger toward the older, both directions, respect. But it's a relationship that has to be there for growth to occur, for this teachable moment to be taken advantage of. And as a Christian, of course, our primary, our first relationship has to be with God. It has to be with God. And that's something we all are working on to certain levels. And again, there's good times with our relationship with God and times where we aren't working the way we should. But to take full advantage of teachable moments, we need to have a good relationship with God. David recognized that. David is a great example in so many things in our lives as far as how a follower of God should live. Turn to Psalms chapter 143. We'll begin reading in verse 7. Psalms 143, verse 7. Answer me speedily, O Lord, my spirit fails. Don't hide your face from me, lest I be like those who go down into the pit. Cause me to hear your loving kindness in the morning, for in you I do trust. Cause me to know the way that I should walk, for I lift up my soul to you. Deliver me from my enemies, O Lord. In you I take shelter. Teach me to do your will. For you are my God, your spirit is good. Lead me in the land of righteousness. We have a hymn, Lord, teach me that I may know the way which I should go. That is from this. That talks about this relationship. David recognized that he needed that relationship. And we recognize, I think all of us here recognize we need that relationship. It's just a matter of how hard we're working on it. And that's a question we each of us have to answer individually and personally. So that's the first requirement, the first event, the first condition, is having relationships that will help you when you come upon a teachable moment. The second condition, event, is that there has to be a catalyst. Something that knocks us out of our daily routine, that shakes us up a little bit. Usually, we get to that point after some kind of a hardship. Sometimes could be fairly severe hardship or a severe trial, where we start to ask those life-altering questions. What direction is my life really headed in? Am I really following the path that I know that I should be following? Why is this happening to me? Should I be doing something different with my life? Again, we don't usually ask those questions when everything is going pretty smoothly and we're happy. It's at the other times where we start thinking about some of those questions. It's human nature to resist change. Human nature to resist change. And certainly when we're happy, it's human nature to resist change. Because if we're happy, of course, we must be doing everything right. Most everyone knows that's not true. David did have a catalyst, many catalysts, actually, as you look through the life of David in his life. But we're going to read the first part of chapter 143 to see the catalyst that got him to the position that he was in with verses 7 through 10 that we just read. So we'll begin reading in verse 1 of chapter 143 of Psalms. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my supplications. In your faithfulness, answer me. And in your righteousness, do not enter into judgment with your servant. For in your sight, no one living is righteous. Now we get into the catalyst. The enemy has persecuted my soul. He has crushed my life to the ground. He's made me dwell in darkness, just like those who've been dead for a long time. Therefore, my spirit is overwhelmed. This is more than I can handle, is what David is saying. Because of the attacks, because of what's going on in my life, I'm at a point where I can't handle it anymore. My heart within me is distressed, the end of verse 4. I remember what my life used to be like, says the days of old in my Bible. I remember what my life used to be like. I remember when things were good. I remember when our relationship was better, probably he's also referring to. I meditate on all of your works. I muse on the work of your hands. I spread out my hands to you. My soul longs for you. Like a thirsty land, Selah. David was pushed to the point of breaking, where he knew that if something didn't change, if he didn't change, and if God wasn't there along with him, that he would fail. He would break. We've all been at that point, I believe, at some time in our life, where we didn't really know how to move forward. Where we were suffering, and yet we didn't know what to do. The catalyst for change, the catalyst for the beginning of a teachable moment. I have had a number of those in my life. One of them that sticks out pretty clearly in my life that I'm going to share with you today. I grew up with a desire to do the right thing. I think, you know, right from the beginning it was because I wanted to be right. So if you do the right thing, then you're going to be right. But still, that was how I grew up. And it was, generally, that's a good thing, to want to do the right thing. As a young child, wanted to please my parents, wanted to make them happy, tried not to rebel. As I got to be a teenager, there was a little bit more of that. But, you know, again, not bad. I still continued to want to please my parents even as a teenager. But as I grew up, that desire never really matured. Desire to please, to just make everybody happy. The event that occurred in my life that really helped me to grow was a time where there was someone that I respected, someone in a position of authority, someone I wanted to please, made an accusation to me about something that, a part of my character that really hurt, really cut me, because it went against my foundational belief of who I was and how I was. So it was really hard to hear it, hard to think about it. Probably in hindsight, I was kind of proud that, you know, of this part of my character that he was saying wasn't as good as I thought it was. And the whole thing consumed me, thinking about it for quite a long time. And I did all the right things after hearing that. I prayed that God would show me the truth. I fasted about it. I went to other people that should be able to verify that what he said was correct and that I was really blind in this area. And eventually, the problem was, I came out of all of that still convinced that he was wrong. That really wasn't, the way he saw things really wasn't the way it was. So I went to talk to him about it eventually, and that's really where things went off the rail. I was too hurt, I was too emotional, I was too angry, I wanted so badly to please him that I, you know, tried to convince him and then got frustrated when I couldn't convince him, and it became a confrontation. This man was our minister at the time. So it certainly affected our relationship for the length of time he was in the area, I think, the rest of time. And the lesson that I really gained from all of this wasn't what he said, but what I saw in myself was that desire to please people and how strong that was in me and how it motivated me to do the wrong things. Ultimately, to be disrespectful, to not treat him properly, and I saw that again as my eyes were opened. I saw more and more things in my life where I was doing that, focusing on pleasing people rather than pleasing God. That pleasing God wasn't the first thing first priority in my list. It was pleasing other people. And, you know, we could have a debate about whether he was right or I was right about the initial contention. My point is I went through all of this, and it did bring me to a teachable moment. And I did see something about myself. God did show me something about myself that I needed to see, that I needed to learn from, and I needed to change. And now I don't care about what anything says. Anybody says. Not exactly true. But I think there's a little more balance now after, you know, this was 30 years ago, probably longer than that. So the reason I bring this up is because you will find those teachable moments. You may not know when you start what you're going to be taught. But if you allow God to open you up, you allow yourself to be ready to be taught, God has that opportunity to show you and to help you. Job is another person who needed a catalyst in his life. Another example in the Bible. Turn to Job, verse 1, or chapter 1, verse 1. I think everybody knows the gist of this. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. He was blameless and upright. He feared God and he shunned evil. He was doing good. He was living his life in basically a righteous manner. And you know, we know the story. I'll summarize it. Satan challenged God to let him show God that Job wasn't so great. And, you know, the sidebar of that is God knew that Satan would want to try to prove this. I mean, God's the one that said, "Hey, Satan, look at Job. Isn't he pretty awesome? Of all the people on the earth, do you think God didn't know what Satan was going to do? And it was part of his plan of how he would teach Job, how he would bring Job to that moment?" And God gave Satan permission initially just in certain areas, but Job lost possessions, he lost helpers, he lost servants, sheep, donkeys, cattle, shepherds, camels, all lost to raiders. Then his sons and daughters were killed in a whirlwind. And yet, Job still didn't blaspheme God, didn't blame God. He still maintained himself. And Satan then said, well, you're not letting me have a full shot at him. You're kind of handicapping me here, God. Let me touch his body. Let me attack him directly. And so, you know, then we see Job in sackcloth and ashes with pussy, stinky, smelly, painful boils all over his whole body. I don't know that we can really imagine how miserable he was if we haven't been in that situation. And then Job begins to spend time with his friends, all the while proclaiming that he's righteous and he hasn't done anything wrong to deserve what he's facing. But it did eventually lead him to the point where he reached a teachable moment. The suffering, the pain, and then God had Elihu speak up and tell Job what he'd been missing. And then God kind of sealed the deal and talked to Job directly. All of those moments were the catalyst leading to Job reaching that teachable moment, which in his case and in so many cases, what has to happen to us is we have to become humbled. Somewhere we have to, something has to happen that helps us see we're not as great and awesome as we might think we are in whatever area of life this is occurring. That we need help, that we need something that we didn't see before. And it creates then a desire and a recognition to change our life, to make a change. Then that catalyst leads to the third event, third requirement that has to happen to take advantage of those teachable moments. And that third phase, that third aspect is that finally we have to recognize that there's a truth that we need to learn. Where we didn't even realize we were ignorant before, now we at least see that there's something more we have to learn. I'm going to read from the end of Job's story, chapter 42, verses 1 through 4, and I'm reading it from the New Living Translation. Job 42, beginning in verse 1. Then Job replied to the Lord, I know that you can do anything, and no one can stop you. You ask, who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorance? Well, that was me. That was me. I was the one that was ignorant. I was talking about things I did not understand, things that are far too wonderful for me. And you said, listen, and I'm going to speak. I have some questions for you, and you need to be able to answer these. Verse 5, he says, I'd heard about you before, but now I've seen you with my own eyes. I see who you are, God, more clearly. I see how much farther above me you are. In verse 6, I take back everything that I said, and I said in dust and ashes to show my repentance. Job reached a teachable moment, and in this example, Job seized it, and he grew. He made a huge leap forward in his life. And the Bible doesn't tell us a lot more other than that God restored some of the things that Job had lost. It doesn't tell us about the rest of his life. There's secondary works that maybe hint at some of at even what time he lived and things like that. But we don't know a lot about Job, other than we know that God worked with him to show him the thing, something that he needed to know, to take a righteous man, a blameless man, and make him better. And that certainly should be a lesson for all of us, that God is going to continue to work with us. That recognition of truth is important, because that's what seals the deal. We can be humbled, and if we don't see the truth, we don't take advantage. We don't really grow. So we do have to have that recognition. We're going to turn to 2 Kings chapter 6. There's kind of a neat story that I like in here. Again, about sometimes just how blind we are to the truth of the situation that we're facing, the power of God to help us, and how awesome it can be when we recognize the truth that God is trying to show us. 2 Kings chapter 6, we're going to read beginning in verse 8, and we're jumping into the middle of the story a little bit. Now the king of Syria was making war against Israel, and he consulted with his servants and said, "My camp is going to be in such and such a place." So he's just planning with his war council, basically, "I'm going to make camp here or there." And the man of God, which we'll see in a little bit, is Elisha. The man of God sent to the king of Israel and said, "Beware that you don't pass by this place," where the king of Syria said he was going to make camp, "for the Syrians are going down there." The king of Israel sent someone to the place to which the man of God had told him. And thus the man of God warned the king, and he was watchful there not just once but twice. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing, and he called his servants and said to them, "Which one of you are going to confess to being the spy for the king of Israel?" Basically, "Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel? Who's telling the king of Israel my plans?" One of his servants said, "None of us did this, Lord. But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedchamber." He's got an ear. He knows he's being told what your plans are. So the king said, "Go and see where Elisha is, and I can send and get him, capture him." And it was told to him, saying, "Surely, he's in Dothan." Therefore, the king of Syria sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And the servant said to Elisha, "My master, what are we going to do?" And Elisha answered and said, "First thing is, we're not going to be afraid. Don't be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." That didn't appear to be that way to the servant. "I see you and me, Elisha. I see armies and chariots and horses around the city. I don't see where you're getting that idea." Verse 17, Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes. Show him the truth." And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. The truth, when we finally see it, is awesome. This showed that young servant that he underestimated God. He didn't know what was going on. He really didn't have a picture of what God would do to protect and work and help his people. When we come through a teachable moment and we allow ourselves to be taught, the truth that we see when we come out of that is awesome. It always is. If we've used it properly, if we've followed these steps, if we've allowed ourselves to be taught, we see truth that is awesome. God's primary goal with each one of us is to teach us how to think, how to act, how to love, just like he does. He understands the value of a teachable moment. He created us. He understands how powerful that can be. The Bible is full of examples of his desire to teach people and the ways that he used to do that. And many times you'll find in that story that teachable moment. Taking all of this, all the things we've talked about into consideration, I think there's one more question. Well, I don't think there is because it's in my notes. There's one more question that I'm going to ask today, and that is, why do the righteous go through trials? Why do the righteous go through trials? It isn't for punishment. It isn't because of God's whim. It isn't because this is Satan's world. When you look at the scriptures that we've covered, one of the reasons the righteous go through trials is because God knows that a trial is what we need at that point in our life to reach a teachable moment. That isn't the only way God teaches us, but it is one of the ways that God teaches us. Peter, I think, really had a good grasp on this concept. When you read, well, we're going to read in 1 Peter chapter 4, so you can start turning there. But beyond that, even, you read many of the things that Peter wrote about related to trials, and I think he understood. 1 Peter chapter 4. And we're going to read verses 12 and 13. These are familiar scriptures. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though something strange has happened to you, but rejoice. Rejoice because this allows you to partake of part in a way of Christ's sufferings. And because, rejoice also because when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. Rejoice in when you see these trials because it means you're living, you're sharing part of how Christ lived this life here, some of the things he had to do, but it's also because it allows us to see his glory. It will push us into the place where we're there to see his glory, to share in that glory. Peter really said, don't think it's strange when you go through trials. Rejoice because trials lead us to eternal life. But God uses this, at least many times at least, as a last resort. When we aren't able to learn and be taught in a less painful way, God doesn't make us suffer just to make us suffer. God would prefer that we would learn in less drastic ways, with less drastic measures that are needed. And it means to some degree that we can control to some degree, not completely, because again, we're blind to many of our areas of ignorance, but to some degree we can control how severe the trials are that we face by whether we're looking for teachable moments, by whether we're actually waiting to be taught, or God needs to get our attention to bring us to that teachable moment. I'd like you to turn to Jeremiah chapter 18. Jeremiah chapter 18, we're going to begin reading in verse 6. O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter? Look, just as the clay in the potter's hand, so are you in my hand, O nation of Israel. The instant I speak concerning a nation or concerning a kingdom to pluck it up, to pull it down, and to destroy it, if that nation against whom I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent of the disaster that I had thought to bring upon it. He's saying, I see a nation, and he's talking about Israel, really. He says, there are times where it looks to me like you're going to need to suffer to get you to a point where you turn from your ways. But he says, but if they change before I bring all these things on, I'm not going to just bring them to the trial just to bring them to the trial because I said I was going to do it. I will relent. I will love the fact that they saw their problem in a simpler, less painful way, and they started to make changes. Kind of like Nineveh and Jonah, even though they were a carnal society, they still changed from their ways when Jonah preached to them and God relented. He works that way with us too. He can see where we're headed in our life. He can see the path we're headed down. He can see that there's going to be a crossroads coming up here pretty quickly. And I know that all along, he's giving us hints. He's giving us messages that you hear, something you read, something you watch on a sermon you watch on TV, or many different ways, giving you hints. Hey, this is something you need to pay more attention to in your life than you are. And if we do it, he says, good on you, and he moves forward. But if that crossroads keeps coming closer and closer and we haven't recognized the teachable moments that he's giving us, laying out in front of us, he's going to bring us to a point where we're almost forced to recognize that a change has to occur, that something is really going wrong in our life, in some area of our life. If we recognize the truth, we life is much better. God creates opportunities for learning for all of us. I think he's continually doing that. It can come through our own experience. It can come through observations of someone else's experience. But he's giving us opportunities to learn. It's one of those things, if we get a chance, well, we will at some point, to look back on our life, I think we'll see that there were so many teachable moments that were presented to us that we just didn't see. We were blinded for a number of different reasons. We weren't looking for them. We weren't looking for what we lack. We were just trying to be comfortable in what we had. How often have I ignored them? Again, I'll maybe know when I can look back on my life. I'm sure it's more often than I'm comfortable with. And the same goes for you guys. How often have I just stumbled and allowed myself to be distracted when it was right there in front of me? I don't know. So I urge us, all of us, in our lives, daily, in our prayers, daily, to look for those teachable moments when God is opening up an avenue, an area, an opportunity to us. Build those relationships. Build them with God. Build them with those that we are growing in this Christian life with. Build them with others that you trust and can and respect. Look for those catalysts, and when those catalysts are there, when things are difficult, don't just focus on getting through it. Focus on learning from it. When you do recognize what's going on, look for the truth that God is trying to teach you. Look for God's truth And don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of it. I think one of the greatest things any Christian can add to his philosophy of life is that change is good. It's anti-carnality. It's anti most of the things you'll see in this world, I think. Change, when it's godly change, is good. Pray that you recognize it early, the opportunity, and then follow through on it. Find your teachable moment, because if you don't find them, they're going to find you.